driving up here this morning, as Justin said, I'm the mother of three young children, and the kids were all in the back. I was going to come up on my own. And my four-year-old, she's like, I want to come to the men's conference. And in the back of the car, she goes, that's not fair. When will I be old enough to come and hang out with the men? Jonathan and I were like, not for a long time, darling. But anyway, they were very cute. They all wanted to come up, so I think they're going to join us at the end. I believe my husband joined you for Mass this morning in Lycra. Who saw that? That's a little bit scary. I hope you're not too traumatised if this is your first conference. But it's a pleasure to be here. I want you to turn to the person on your left and say, are you ready?
Are you ready?
Yeah. Turn to the person to your right and say, to understand the heart of a woman. Now there's a little laughter. I don't know if that's an indication that you don't actually think it's possible to understand the heart of a woman. It's not a good sign. Means I have my work cut out for me this morning. So in that case, I think we really need to pray. So close your eyes for a moment and we just ask the Lord to be here with us. Father in heaven, I thank you for this company of men who are gathered here who have responded to your invitation, Lord. I pray that your spirit would be truth in their hearts this weekend and that they would come away with a profound sense of your love and your plan and your purpose in their lives. I pray for the young men of God who can't be here this year, and I ask you to bless and protect all of our families and our children who we may have left behind. I ask that you would be truth and wisdom on my lips this morning. We ask this in your name. Amen. Amen. Who's here for the first time? You've probably already done this, but put your hand up if this is your first conference. That's incredible. Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, welcome to the Young Men of God journey. Justin said, I have been here for a lot of conferences. Over the past 10 years, I have been invited to share insights into women, and it's been an enormous privilege and pleasure. And we've had a lot of fun over the years, looking at expectations that women have of men. And after a particular talk I gave, I received a number of emails and feedback. And I just wanted to share two of those with you because I feel like they really frame this morning's input. One of them was from a gentleman and one from one of the wives. The gentleman said, I'm 45 years old and I have never had a relationship with a woman. I've actually never had women explain to me like that. My mother left us when I was young and I didn't grow up with sisters. And as is the case with men, we often don't attempt that which we feel we'll fail at. And so I've never even tried to have a relationship. He's 45 years old. The second feedback came from a woman, one of the wives. She said, my husband attended the Young Men of God conference a month ago, and he's come back a changed man. She said, our marriage has been struggling for some time, and recently I resigned myself to the fact that I just had to endure this for the sake of our children. But God works in mysterious ways. My husband came home and he walked through the door. That's terrible. I can't cry at a men's conference. How funny would that be? To do that at a women's conference, not at a men's conference. My husband came home and he got down on both knees and he asked my forgiveness for the times in which he has not loved me as I needed to or I wanted to be loved. He said that it's not that I don't love you, it's that I don't know how. And I thought, how true for many of us that we don't actually sometimes know how to love people. I'm a mother of three young children. I thought I'd waltz into that and be all over it. It's been the most humbling experience of my entire life, being a mother, realizing that I actually have to learn to love my children. Because we often give love instinctually. We give love the way we like to receive it. But we actually have to learn to love. St. John of the Cross said, at the end of your day, you will not be judged on how much money you have in the bank, what job you have, what car you drive, where you've travelled, what house you own. It will come down to one thing, and that one thing will be how well you have loved. I received a letter during the week, and at the top of the letter from a friend was a quote, and she said, on the day of the great examination, love will be the entire syllabus. John Paul II, he's a saint now. It's funny getting your head around that. I grew up when John Paul II was Pope, now he's a saint. But he said, you will never experience the fulfillment, the joy, the passion, the pleasure, the joy, the satisfaction, the fulfillment. You will never find the things that you're searching for when you seek your own ends. He said, you will only ever experience these things when you seek to make a gift of yourself in love to another. Some of you who are here for the first time, you're like, back up a minute, lady. You know, this is the blokes' conference, and you're a chick, and you're up the front, and now you're starting to talk about all that mushy love stuff, and you're like, am I in the right place? I'm like, you are exactly in the right place. Because this conference and the Young Men of God movement is about understanding the essence about what it means to be men. And we run a Catholic Women's Conference in February next year. And at that conference, we look at the essence of what it means to be a woman. And we can't look at the essence of what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, without having reference to the other gender. Now, you will never hear me say opposite sex because we are not opposites. Opposite comes from the word opposition, which means we're in competition with each other. And that's not what we were made for. We are made for complementarity with one another. And man and woman are called to come alongside each other as friend, helpmate, and complementary partner. We run into problems when we don't understand how to do this coming alongside each other. This morning, what I'd like to do is to unpack three core desires of a woman's heart. And I guess to give you some practical insights and ideas around how you can respond to these desires. But I'd like to set these three desires in front of a much bigger backdrop. And that backdrop is the backdrop of love. But specifically love as a virtue. And you're like, oh, how did she say that word? No one uses that language these days. Did anyone tell her? It's not like you're down at the pub Friday night and you're like, crack open a beer, g'day Mikey, and I don't know, my man's voice on. And you go, how's your week been? Good. How are you growing in the virtues this week? We don't use that language. We don't talk like that. What is a virtue? Put very simply, a virtue is a habit. A virtue is a habit. The richer definition of virtue is a habitual disposition to do the good. By disposition, it means that you desire it. So it's not enough just to do a good act. You need to have a disposition and a desire and a joy and wanting to do that good act. And so this morning, we're going to look at understanding women in this light of growing in virtue and growing in the habit of love. Love is the greatest. Faith, hope, and love. The greatest of these is love. So that's what we're going to take a look at this morning. Virtue takes a lot of work, a lot of effort. It's like exercising. Years ago, when I was younger, I had two lots of major spinal surgery. I turned 40 last year, so now I'm entering the next phase of my life. It's a little sad. But anyway, I'm entering the next phase of my life, and I've realised that if I want to go into this next phase of my life strong for my children, for myself, I have to do some work. And so years ago, I had to join a gym and start doing a weights program to strengthen my back for the years ahead. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, I don't particularly like exercise and I really don't like gyms, but I've had to do it. I had to apply myself, I had to develop the habit for my good down the track. And growing in the virtue of love is the same thing. It's going to be very difficult, but it's worth it. The payoff is definitely worth it. So if you're taking notes this morning, this is where we begin. Looking at these three desires of a woman's heart. And I'm taking these from the work of John Eldridge. John Eldridge wrote a book a number of years ago called Wild at Heart. And in it he said, in a man's heart there are three core desires, and a woman has a complementary or corresponding three desires. He said the three desires of a man's heart is that every man longs to live an adventure, wants a beauty to rescue, and a battle to fight. He said the corresponding desires of a woman's heart are that she longs to be caught up in an adventure, she wants to be the beauty who is chosen, and she longs to be fought for. So we're going to unpack each one of those now. After I've had a drink of water. All right. So if you're taking notes, this is number one. She longs to be caught up in an adventure. Women long to be caught up in something greater than themselves. They want to be invited into something bigger than themselves. But here's an important distinction. The woman does not want to be your adventure. Because deep down she knows that once you've conquered her, you'll move on to the next challenge or the next adventure. She wants to be caught up in something greater than herself. A recent survey was done looking at what women initially find attractive in men. And good looks, surprisingly, don't come number one. So for those of you, all of you meet that grade in that department. But anyway, the number one thing, the number one thing that women are looking for is a man with a sense of vision, purpose, and mission. A man who knows where he's going, who has a sense of himself, and that he can invite her into something and take her with him. Years ago, Jonathan and I, my husband, we've been married for 14 years. And prior to this, he chased me for 3 years and I wouldn't go out with him. Some people think that, I don't know, it's a bit harsh. But anyway, I have my reasons. Jonathan had left home when he was 15 years of age, and he kind of travelled the world, run amok, and he'd come back to his faith and the church in his early 20s. And he had a crush on me, and I thought he was pretty attractive. And so we developed this incredible friendship. And he asked one priest one day, he said, you know, I just don't understand why she won't go out with me. You know, he was gobsmacked. He's like, why wouldn't she want to? And the priest said to him, because she's waiting to see which way you go. And although I couldn't have articulated it at the time, I had a very strong sense of my dignity as a woman. I had a beautiful father, and he really sowed that into me as a young girl. And so I wasn't going to give myself to someone, and I was in my 20s, so I was sort of looking at marriage at this point. I wasn't going to give myself to someone who I wasn't sure would make a good go of it. And Jonathan tells the story. One day he asked me, and I wrote him a letter back, and he tells the story. He's in the refectory at Canberra University, and he's writing this letter to me. He's really ticked off. He's like, the woman tells me what to do. He's like, but hang on a minute. I'd really like to be with her. And so do you know what he did? He went away and he did his work. You see, as men, you have to do the work on your soul before you can enter a relationship with women. And the work that you have to do on your soul takes you away from the company of women. Minor disclaimer, if you're married and you haven't done your work, it doesn't mean you need to leave your wife. Somehow you just work out how you do that work while you're with her. Okay. Part of the adventure that Jonathan was able to, years later, when he did come back to me, he was able to approach me from a position of strength and invite me into an incredible adventure. Sometimes exhausting, but for the most part, incredible. He's got a lot of energy, my husband. I don't know if you saw him. He did 10 sets of that silly mountain down to Stanmore Park this morning before 6:30 in the morning. But anyway, part of our adventure was going down to Melbourne and studying marriage and family studies at the John Paul II Institute. While we were down there, we did a unit on moral theology. And this theologian came from Rome. And he said there are three questions that every human person has to ask and answer in this order. He said, you need to know who you are. Number two, you need to know where you're going. And number three, who will travel with you? Number one, who am I? Number two, where am I going? And number two, who will travel with me? And we have big problems in our relationships between young men and women today because we have a lot of men and girls going to the other gender to find an answer to that first question of who am I? But you know what? A girl can't tell you who you are. Just as you can't tell her who she is. You need to discover your identity, and your truest identity will be found in a relationship with Jesus Christ. St. Augustine said, our hearts are restless until they rest in you, O Lord. And you will look for God in any number of places. They say every man who knocks on the door of a brothel is looking for God. He's not looking for a prostitute. He's looking for comfort, security, reassurance. We are looking for God, and you will look for him in any number of places throughout your life until perhaps one day you are so broken and so lost that you remember this conference and you'll be going, oh, that's right. Jesus Christ is where I find my truest identity. So who am I, where am I going, and who will travel with me? You need to know, ask and answer these questions in this order. Because if you don't know the answer to those first two questions, you can do women a lot of damage. And we see that played out many times in people's lives. In some tribes in Africa, the men can't date a woman until they've killed a lion. You know, not that there's any lions roaming around Stanley Park for you to kill this weekend, but you get the idea that a man has to go away from a woman. He has to face his weakness, his vulnerability, his fears, his insecurity. He has to face those things to discover his strength. And only when he's discovered his strength can he then approach a woman. And when he's done that, he approaches her from a position of strength. One thing I'll say in defense of men in this area, and because I never want you to hear me criticizing you or, you know, anything like that at these conferences, because as women, we fail you in many ways as well. And don't worry, at the women's conference, you need to get stuck into the women about how to love you better as well. But this sense of adventure is hardwired into your DNA as men. You live in a culture that says marriage and family are incompatible with this sense of adventure. But I just want to tell you this morning, they're not at all. A wife and children can be the greatest adventure of your life if you've answered these questions properly. One challenge that men have, I believe, and I'm seeing more of this coming into relationships with women, is that they lose a sense of adventure. Now, Brother Dan, is he in the room at the moment? Is he here? Oh, Dan, sorry, he's right. Okay. I am going to drop you. I was talking to Dan about this conference, and we're just talking about some of these ideas and points. And he said there's a saying, he's Italian, and he said there is a saying that the Italian mamas say to their boys when they fall for a girl. Now, I can't repeat it because it would be totally inappropriate for me to tell you that up here. So you can corner him at morning tea. He's sitting second from the end in the back row, and you can ask him what that is.
What's that?
But translated, essentially it means the mama says to her boy, don't let the woman take the goodness out of you. Now, a lot of men get married and their wives are well-meaning, but they try to control and domesticate and henpeck. None of your wives would be like that, of course, but there are some that are. And I just want to encourage you, if you're newly married or going to be married, to gently educate your wife. John Paul II said life is co-educative, men and women educating one another. And we need to do this gently. We need to express our needs gently to one another. So she longs to be caught up in adventure, number one. Number two, she longs to be the beauty who is chosen and who is desired. Every one of us, male and female, carry a deep existential question, the question of being. And our questions are slightly different. For men, your question revolves around this idea of strength. Am I strong? Do I have what it takes? And a woman's question is slightly different. But it revolves around this idea of beauty. She wants to know, am I beautiful? A woman needs to know, am I beautiful? Do I captivate you not as a body or body parts, but as a human person? Does my soul captivate you? We have three children. We have a daughter, a son, and another daughter. And often Jonathan will travel. He speaks regularly and we'll pick him up from the airport. And my son is just as happy to chuck on his pyjamas and go in his dressing gown to meet his dad. But the girls are very different. The girls spend the whole morning getting dressed up. It drives me crazy. They want their hair done and they put their clips in, and the criteria for what dress they wear is how spinny the dress is. Why? Because they want to captivate the heart of their father with their feminine beauty. And you know, when Jonathan sees them, he gets this little twinkle in his eye and the girls notice it. Because it answers part of that question. Am I beautiful? Will you choose me? You see, a woman is the most captivating thing in all of creation. We joke, we say, you know, God perfected his workmanship in a woman. He didn't need to create anything else after her. He stopped. She's the pinnacle. But we joke about that, but it is true that a woman is the most captivating thing in all of creation. But she's also the most exploited. And we can't talk about a woman's deep desire to be chosen, to be desired, to be found beautiful, without talking about the impact that pornography has on the heart of a woman. Jonathan and I have the enormous privilege of speaking on these topics here and overseas. But I tell you, the greater privilege is when people share their lives with you and we get the chance to walk alongside them for a period of time. And over the years, we have heard countless stories of the utter devastation that pornography causes in the lives of men and women. Men and women, marriages blown apart, absolutely blown apart. Men who have lost their businesses because they spent all their time downloading and their businesses went under. Men who have lost their marriages, they've lost the right to father their own children. Men who it was no longer enough just to see pornography, but they took that extra step then to acting it out. Some men became sexual predators, started visiting prostitutes. 25 years of marriage, gone like that. Okay? Pornography is highly addictive. For those of you who haven't heard me speak on this topic or Jonathan before, don't let it get a hold of you. It is highly addictive. There's this big fat BS idea out there that what you do in private, the fantasy world, has no impact in the public domain, and it's a load of rubbish. I pick up the pieces at the women's conference most years of wives and girlfriends and daughters whose husbands, boyfriends, fathers have been looking at pornography, and it's utterly devastating. Those stories I told you about those men, they're not some randoms on the street. Those men are good men who have been husbands and fathers, and they sit in church every single week. Don't think that just because you're in church that's going to immune you from the impact or the addictive nature of pornography. It won't. There are some things I can't guarantee you in life, but this one I can. If you choose to look at pornography on a regular basis, and by regular I even mean once every 2 months, I consider that regular. If you choose to look at pornography regularly, you will not be able to have a healthy and an intimate relationship with a woman. It will rob you of your capacity for true intimacy. Now, none of you are going to go on to become sexual predators, but if you look at pornography, if you've been exposed to pornography, you will come away with very toxic ideas about the value of sex, what sex is all about, the value of women and women's bodies. And what is really devastating and what we're seeing in schools at the moment is young men just reared in pornography. It's become a sex curriculum for young boys. And I want to tell you today, that is not how women want to be treated. They don't want to be treated like that. It's not normal. And women don't want to be treated like that. What will happen if you look at this stuff is that over time it will normalise some of those practices for you. Jonathan was called into a boys' school once where the boy had raped his girlfriend, and the father was called in with the boy in the principal's office, and the father said, well, isn't that just what boys do? That those practices have become so normalised that they didn't even see that as a crime anymore. Pornography will rob you of your capacity for relationship. Highly addictive, and I just want to encourage you that if that is an issue in your life this weekend, you couldn't have a better place to deal with it than here at this conference. But I'm not here to speak about the impact of pornography on you. I'm here to speak about the impact it has on the heart of a woman. If a woman's deepest question is, am I beautiful? Will you choose me? Do you desire me? What conclusion do you think she draws when she finds out that her dad, even her husband, her boyfriend is looking at pornography? The only conclusion a woman draws is that she isn't good enough. And I've had women say to me, if only I'd perform those acts, or if I look this way, then he would have stayed. And I have to tell them, no, it's not about her. It's not about her. This is an issue in the heart. The impact on a woman's life is the same as if you were to actually commit a physical affair. Jesus in Scripture says, any man that looks at a woman lustfully has committed adultery with her, where? In his heart. The impact is utter devastation. John Paul II said the problem with pornography is not that it shows too much, but actually it shows too little. It shows too little of what a human person really is. Grandfather said to his grandson one day, "Son, don't look at pornography." He's like, "How come, Grandpa?" He said, "It'll ruin your imagination. If this is an issue for you, please deal with it this weekend. Don't sit there and feel ashamed, because pornography thrives on shame and keeping you in a prison of shame and self-loathing. Please deal with it. You have the sacrament of reconciliation this afternoon. There is no better place than to bring that into the light and to receive the support of your brothers in the Lord." So number one, she longs to be caught up in intervention. Number two, she longs to be the beauty who is chosen. And number three, she longs to be fought for. I'll tell you a little story about an entrepreneur in London. Now, he was watching men and women really stuff up their relationships, and he thought maybe this was a compatibility issue. And so he decided to open a store in London, down in the city, and he called it the Husband Shop. And he wanted to help wives make good choices when it came to husbands. Now, his shop had very strict rules. You could enter on level one, it had six levels. You could go up a level, but you couldn't go back down. You could only go back down to exit the building. Okay, so the women, obviously, are lining up for days, and the line's right down the road. And they open the store, and the women run in, and on level one it says, "All these husbands are hardworking and good providers." And the women are like, bonus. So they go up to level two. Like, "All the husbands on this level are good providers, and they're really good communicators." So she goes up to level three, and on level three, "All these husbands are good providers, they're good communicators, and they're incredibly romantic." And so she's like, "This doesn't get much better." She goes up to level four, and on level four, "All these men are good providers, they're good communicators, they're incredibly romantic, and they help with domestic chores." She's like, "OMG, this doesn't get any better." So she goes up to the fifth level. And on the fifth level, "All these men are hardworking, they're good communicators, they're incredibly romantic, they help with domestic chores, and they're really good looking." And she's like, "Oh my goodness, I just have to go to floor six." So she goes up to floor six, and it's empty. And she walks over to the sign in the middle of the floor, and it reads, "This floor solely exists for the purpose to prove the point that women are impossible to please." Interestingly, he then, after the failure of the husband's store, he opened the wife's store across the road. This was a raving success. Floor one, "All these women," same rules. Floor one, "All these women are really good cooks." Floor two, "All these women are good cooks and they like sex." And then floor three through to six, they were never actually visited. The author of this little story wrote it to prove the point that women are impossible to please. But you know what? I beg to differ. I think there are three elements that, if you were to pay attention to these in your relationship, can really transform your relationship, your marriages. And I'll give them to you in just a moment. Many men want the maiden without the fight. This is where pornography is so easy. A man can go to pornography and he can take this feeling of being strong, he can take for the woman, but he gives nothing in return. You, as men, one of your desires is that you need a battle to fight. She wants to be fought for. And these three elements that I'm going to give you in a minute are three ways in which you can fight for the hearts of the women in your life. Many men think that the greatest battle is asking a woman out on the first date. If you haven't done that yet, that is not your biggest battle. I hate to disappoint you. The biggest battle that you will face will be maintaining and growing and nurturing an atmosphere of love if you choose to go and get married. Many men get married, they think marriage is the culmination, not the beginning. Marriage is the beginning. And the fight for a woman's heart begins the day after you say, "I do." And you better never stop fighting after that point. These three elements, these three ways in which you can fight for a woman's heart, are through romance, non-sexual affection, and communication. And then by no means limited to these three. But in my experience as a woman, but also walking alongside many women for many years now, these three tend to be the standouts: romance, non-sexual affection, and communication. Gottman is a man in the States, and he has studied what makes a successful relationship. And he has studied marriages and relationships over a period of 25, 30 years. He said it is the positive, the small positive things done often. The cumulative effect of small positive things done often that make all the difference. Grand gestures tend to be short-lived, but it's the daily positive actions. We're talking this morning, our backdrop is a backdrop of love as a virtue, love as a habit, learning to love. These are the ways that you can learn to practically love the women in your life. So let's start with romance, okay? This is one of her number one emotional needs. And her need for romance is as baffling to you as is your need for sex to her. And I teach women this at the women's conference that a man's need for sex is actually an emotional need. And a woman's need for romance is her emotional need. James Dobson, he wrote a book, What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women. And I encourage anyone getting married to read this book, What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women. He said one of the number one causes for depression, not clinical depression, but this depressive feeling that women experience at different points in their life, one of the number one reasons for this is a lack of romantic love within marriage. Okay? Women are shocked at how fleeting this is. The great sorrow for many women is a disappointing marriage where a man no longer pursues her. And what she wants is actually what you are meant to become. It's what you're meant to become. It's crucial to her existence. You see, for men, romance is nice, but it's not necessary. But for her, she can't live without it. And a woman who is not cherished, who is not romanced, something inside of her dies. I was reading an article by one of the archbishops in the States this week, and he was speaking to the men in his congregation. He said, if she's wilting, it's because you're withholding. If she's wilting, it's because you're withholding. You know the sayings, you know, happy wife, happy life. You can tell the success of a man by the smile of his wife's face. There's some truth in that. Because when she's cherished, she's alive. And I just want to say that these principles apply to the generally healthy relationships that have gone a bit stale or there's a bit of baggage. There are situations where these won't apply, where the wife struggles with clinical depression or mental illness or addictions, or where there's abuse involved. If those are the case, well, that's a different story and that needs other intervention, professional intervention. You see, love is not a feeling that you feel. Our culture has taken what is true and what is beautiful and what is good, and it distorts it and it twists it and it perverts it. But love, while it has an element of emotion to it, love is actually a decision that you make. Love is a decision that you make. John Paul II said, love is to will the good of the other. The opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is to use another. We're talking about love as a virtue. A virtue is a habit, learning the habit of loving. Love is not a feeling. In marriage, if you go on to get married, there will be times in your marriage where you don't feel loving feelings towards your wife. But you still need to choose to act in loving ways. There's a scientific, physiological basis to this feeling of love. You know, we enter a relationship, we have a crush on the other gender, and stars are flying, and it's all very romantic and infatuated with each other, but you know what? That can't last. There's hormones that are being released during that time. They call it the romance cocktail. You know, where you think that person can do no wrong. You'll do anything for them. But it only lasts about 18 months to 2 years. And you need to know this. Because if you get married based on a feeling, what happens when that marriage runs into difficulty or there are challenges and you don't feel in love anymore? It's at that point you need to start building a love that will see you through a lifetime and acting in loving ways. It's the little foxes in life that ruin the vineyard. It's rarely a big fallout in a marriage. It's the cumulative effect of the little negative things, the little chipping away that ruin the marriage. I want to give you a couple of suggestions, because after one of the conferences, one of the men said to me, you know, you've told us all this stuff, but you haven't really told us how, like what to actually do. So here's my suggestions on romance. You're not going to get this every week, are you? He's like, and just don't tell the women that you heard this, because they'll think you're pretty awesome if they think you've come up with it on your own. So we'll keep that out of our secret. All right, one big thing a year, and please make it your wedding anniversary. Okay? There's so many men, so many women that I know whose men, husbands have forgotten their anniversary. You know, it's my birthday this week, and all I have to do is keep breathing to make it from one birthday to the next. That's all I have to do. That everyone celebrates it. That a wedding anniversary, that takes a lot of work and a lot of effort. And you know what? We should be getting alongside each other in our marriages and supporting each other and celebrating our anniversaries. You know when your mate's birthday is? Find out when his anniversary is. Support him. Walk alongside him and be there for him. So celebrate your anniversary. Don't tell me that you don't have any money, because it's on the same day every year and you can save for it. Okay? And then the little gestures, the little things that mean something to women, are things like acts of thoughtfulness, dressing an event up. So don't just say to her, you want to go out for dinner? Where do you want to go? Organise it. Book a babysitter. Send her a letter in the post inviting her on this date. You guys laugh at that, but you know what? I mean, she'll be like, oh my gosh, best thing God's gift. She'll love you. Tea light candles. I know you're all looking at me going, what the? Tea light candles. Don't just light two, light 100. Fill a room with them. It's amazing the impact that a candle can have on a woman, I tell you. Send her flowers. If she has little children, take the kids for a day. Give her the house to herself and tell her she's not allowed to do any housework while she's there. Jonathan did that for me a couple of weeks ago, had a lot on, and he said, I'm taking the kids from 10 till 4 and you're not allowed to do any housework. It's like, okay. Women will protest. I was like, oh, you know, just an hour would be fine. He's like, stop being a martyr. You've got from 10 till 4. Do that for her. Buy her a voucher for a massage or get her nails done or something. I'm not into that, but some women are. Find out what means something to her. Little acts. These will make all the difference. Remember that little regular investments go a long way to maintaining an atmosphere of love. Okay, fighting for her heart, that's romance, now non-sexual affection. This is the second element that I think, if you really grew in this habit, will make a huge difference if you're married, obviously. And if you're single and you're still at school, don't tune out. Because this is a season of preparation. You can choose to use these years, 16, they call it the critical decade, 16 through to 26. It's the critical decade of your life, where you will make foundational decisions and choices that will frame your future, and particularly the relationships that you have with women. Use your single years wisely. Don't tune out. Learn now. Put it into practice now. Practice on your mum and your sisters. John Paul II said, be schooled in authentic love. Learn. Okay. If you're a consecrated man, brother here today, please listen and learn. The men that are getting married to the women that I'm walking alongside have not learned this stuff. And their marriages are running into problems. This stuff is so simple, and has the power to save a marriage. John Gottman said that one of the major reasons for divorce is men who don't know how to show love. Okay? And if you are married here today, like that man at the email at the beginning, it's never too late to begin. I have a bit of a newsflash for you, that the emotions, you can put all this effort into the tea light candles and the nails and the flowers and all that nice stuff, but I want to tell you the emotions that she feels when romanced, this will come as a big blow, have nothing to do with sex. They have everything to do with her feeling protected, secure and comforted. John Paul II wrote a book before he became Pope called Love and Responsibility, and in it he talks about the need for men, before they get married, to really learn about their sexuality and then that of their wives. And I want to tell you, I've walked with a couple of women in the past 12 months whose wedding night was utterly devastating for them. Utterly devastating. because her husband just didn't know how to get it together in this area. You see, John Paul II said there's no such thing as a frigid woman, only an inattentive husband. That's a huge thing to say. Huge thing. And I really want to encourage you that if you are preparing for marriage, to get resourced in this area. It's very important. One of the common complaints from women is that when we were dating, he was so affectionate, and now we're married, all he wants is sex all the time. Learn the importance of a hug without the intention of sexual intimacy. Another book that I really recommend in this area of understanding women is called For Women Only. You can get it at Kurong. It's another really great resource. So romance, non-sexual affection, communication. Communication is really important. Women like to talk. I don't know if you've noticed that. If you haven't, I need to feel your pulse, because women like to talk. Men and women communicate very differently. Men communicate to build relationship. Women communicate to build relationship. Men communicate to give report, to exchange facts. What's perceived sometimes as a woman nagging is not actually her nagging, but her trying to fix a relationship, trying to fix the problem through communication. Many men listen for the facts to solve the problem. Here's a little insight when you're listening to women. Don't sift through the feelings to get to the facts. Sift through the facts to get to the feelings, because it's the feelings that hold the key. She quite often doesn't want you to fix the problem for her. She just wants to be heard and listened to. Okay? She wants to be listened to, not just heard, because sometimes I know when women are talking, it's like this wall of sound coming at you. I hope you don't feel that this morning. But I remember Jonathan, I came home one day and he walked in the door and I'm like, no, he's like, oh, make it stop. It's like a machine gun. Stop talking. It's like this wall of sound coming at him. I know, he's horrible, isn't he? He's actually pretty nice. All right. So the insight is listen for the feelings, because they hold the key. She wants you to share her life, but she also wants you to share your life with her. Care about the details of her life. And I'd just like to say, if your marriage is in a difficult season, shift the focus from resolving conflict, while that's important and has its place, to restoring love. And if your marriage is in a difficult place, can I just leave you with this? Get the movie Fireproof, watch the movie War Room, and just have a look at that tape on marriage. You see, you all, in relationships with women at one point or another, will feel like she is your enemy. You might feel like your wife is your enemy. You're more divided than united. But your wife and the women in your life are not your enemy. You have an enemy. You definitely have an enemy. And I tell you what, he's hell-bent on destroying you. He's hell-bent on destroying your marriage. He's hell-bent on, at 16, 17 years of age, getting you hooked on pornography so that you can't even have a decent relationship with a woman. He's hell-bent on steering you off course from your priestly vocation. We have an enemy. Make no mistake about it. There is an enemy who wants to steal and kill and destroy in this area of relationship with women. I just want to invite the music team to come up, because we're just going to close with a song this morning. And in a moment, I'll invite you to stand. And I really want you to sing this as a prayer, but more as a declaration of the promises of God over your life. Years ago, Jonathan went into a boys' school and he's talking about relationships. And he said, you know, boys, it's not sex that you're after. And you're like, and he's like, no, it's not sex you're after. And one boy actually put up his hand. He's like, oh, sir, I'm pretty sure it is. And he's like, no. Before you are sexual, you are relational. And as men, you are born to have healthy, fulfilling, dignified, pure, passionate, beautiful relationships with the women in your life. That is the plan of God for your life. He wants that for you. And the theme of this conference is infinitely more. And God wants to give you the infinitely more in your life. He wants to give you that. You're not here by accident this weekend. He wants to give you his promises. Infinitely more. It's not just a nice theme for a conference or something that looks good on a brochure. Infinitely more is the promise and the word of God for your life this weekend. He wants that for you. But for that infinitely more to be released in your life, you have to cooperate with Him. St. Catherine of Siena said that He who created you without your cooperation, He will not save you without your cooperation. For God's grace, for the infinitely more to be fully released in your life, He needs your cooperation. What will you say? Will you say yes? Can I just encourage you? You have adoration and the gift of reconciliation this afternoon. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid to go there this afternoon and to take your stuff. Take your addiction to porn, to alcohol. Take your depression. Take your struggle with anger and rage. Take your marriage that is in ruins. Take the devastation of your children who might have gone off course. Take that there this afternoon and He will give you this infinitely more. I invite you to stand this morning. We're just going to close with this song. And I really invite you to sing this from your heart. And I will stand alongside you as a woman, but in place of the women in your life today. And let's just pray the declaration and the promises of God over our life for His infinitely more this morning. Amen.